There was a statue of him. Now, St. Junipero is canonized, but there was a statue of Venerable Antonio in the courtyard of that Franciscan monastery / missionary college down in Mexico City. So they were established. So and they knew they had already had they had the memorials of like Bartolomé de las Cajas and the other missionaries who were complaining about the Spaniards who were taking advantage of the Indians.
Right. We're not, remember, we're talking the middle of the 1700s. This is not right after Cortez's conquest. This is this is 200 years later, and there's been a lot of history. The history of New Spain, well, of Spain at this time and New Spain, is tremendous, which is a whole nother subject, but there's lots of books written on this topic to give you sort of a background of what, if you've never read Isabella of Spain by William Thomas Walsh, that's a great place to start.
And unfortunately, we have here at this time the Enlightened Monarchs. This is the era of Freemasonry getting a foothold already.
Spain's going downhill.
With the suppression of the Jesuits. The Franciscans, one of the, I think we've kind of come out of our timeline here, but one of the things about the Franciscans that I learned only recently was one author made the point, look, you know, you can accuse a lot of the Spanish of discrimination or atrocities, unjust actions, uncharitable, certainly unchristian actions, in taking advantage of the indigenous peoples. There's no question. The we know about this because of the missionaries who were complaining, but it's not like the Indians themselves had written records of these things. So we know about it from the Spaniards. You know, the good ones who were complaining. But one of the things about the Franciscans that makes the lies that are said about them so execrable is that they, in a sense, were naive about the Indians. Their approach to the natives, Junipero never referred to them as savages.
Right.
He refused to call them names like that. He referred to them as the poor ones, because they were the ones who were deprived of so many material goods, and of course deprived of the knowledge of God as well. So he thought of them in this double sense as impoverished, but consequently worthy of pity and worthy of mercy, right? Needful, anyway, of mercy. So Saint
he always spoke of them in the most charitable terms. His letters are always extremely kind and charitable about them.
Some of these Franciscans were so naive about the Indians, they thought that God was going to, God had blessed so many of Spain's endeavors and so many of the Franciscan endeavors that God would bless their endeavors so much that when they came, the Indians would all just, they would be these enchanted people that had hardly been touched by sin and that would fall sort of hook, line, and sinker for the faith. They'd be head over heels in love with God as soon as the missionaries started to preach to them. Now, obviously, those sorts of naive notions about the virtue of the Indians had to be gotten rid of. They were reality sort of set in at a certain point, and they were disabused of that. But the point is that if you look at them from the point of view of what were their dispositions when they went in, their dispositions weren't, we're going to see an inferior people. We're going to take savages and give them some sort of civilization, and even if we have to beat it into them. You know, their attitude was very far from that, especially the Franciscans. I'm told that people have plowed through the Franciscan literature of the time. There was this spirit of almost bizarre naivete and a sort of optimism about the missions in the New World, that as long as we go and treat them kindly and show them God's charity, they'll all convert.
This is 100 years after the French missions and the 8 North American martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're going to a different area. It's true. They were different. They were not like the Iroquois, but they had their own issues.
So let's chip away at some of the the last 15 years of his life, 14, 15, somewhere like that. He's in Alta California. He only goes back, I think, to Mexico once. He makes a 2,000-mile round trip on foot. Keep in mind that mosquito bite that actually literally had him at death's door more than once. And he insisted on walking all the way to Mexico to speak to the royal governor, because some of the officials in Alta California were not behaving themselves and were treating the Indians shabbily, or were
interfering in the missionaries,
failing to honor the autonomy that the missionaries were supposed to have. Maybe we should mention what it was, how Father Serra got there. So in missionary history, you frequently have missionaries sort of hooking rides with secular endeavors. For instance, St. Francis Xavier gets over to Spain, gets over to China, thanks to the Portuguese, and he comes as a Portuguese secular authority. He's actually got authority from the King of Portugal. But this is all, as far as he was concerned, something of a legal fiction to get him a ride over. I mean, he did his duties, but this was how he got his ride. And of course, there are merchant ships, there are military people, there are government people. And it is not unknown in the history of missionary activity for that to happen, because that's how you traveled. You know, it's not like the Franciscans owned ships. I mean, they didn't own much. Individually, they owned nothing. And so they had to rely on
other infrastructure,
exactly. In this case, the Crown of Spain. And therefore, there were military men, there were royal officials, there were ranchers, farmers, people who were there to make their livelihood there. And also, what occasioned the activity in Alta California, which was new, mm-hmm. in the time of Saint Junipero, as opposed to the activity in Baja California and in the rest of Mexico, they were afraid that the English and the Russians were going to claim Spanish territory that the crown had already claimed like 150 years earlier in some of those explorations. Mm-hmm. But they never had a sustained presence in any of these places.
Right. Now the Russians are coming through Alaska.
The Russians are coming down from Alaska. And in fact, there was a time when the Franciscans and the Russian monks met, and they were afraid that they were going to rumble. You know, there was a fear, but they met, and it was very charitable. There was no conflict. But the English, of course, would have been a real problem. They didn't get along well with Catholic Spain or Catholic France. And therefore, although they would have gotten along with the French at this point, I think, just because of the way the French were acting. But when you look at the reasons that got them there, they necessarily had to be accompanying military personnel, because the idea was we're going to establish Spanish military presidios in California so that the English and the Russians don't get any stupid ideas to come in and take our land.
But, brother, in Spain, wasn't it true that their idea of the missions was always a joint effort? I mean, there's almost no... There are very few instances of the missionaries doing their own thing without having the civil authority being established there.
The mission itself wasn't joint, because the mission itself was run by the friars.
No, but as far as the expedition and the establishment in a location.
Yeah, well, you had to have a sharing of resources and all that, and just for the safety of the travel of the friars at times, and other people who were maybe dependent upon them. They had young people, they had young Indians who helped them in their travels and all. But for the most part, what would happen is they would establish the presidio, and then they would have a mission nearby, but that was a temporary mission. Well, as soon as they could, they'd move the mission like 5 miles away so that the military presence wasn't so visible to the Indians.
They wouldn't be a bad example.
And so that there wouldn't be a bad example. These are soldiers, so what are they going to do? They're going to drink, they're going to do, you know, soldier stuff that the friars aren't going to want necessarily the Indians to be exposed to that. So that's one of the things that they attack him for, is, you know, he brings soldiers in. Well, no, he basically hitched a ride. That was his occasion. That was his, you know, he thumbed a ride, so to speak, with the soldiers. But another one of the things that they say against him is that he enslaved the Indians, which is far from true. But what the thing that that's very loosely based upon is the fact that the missions, what they wanted to do was to civilize the Indians. They had a threefold objective: to protect them, to civilize them, and to convert them. Not in that, not necessarily in that order. But in order to civilize them, you would wanted to teach them how to, well, clothe themselves, for one thing. When they first set eyes on the Indians from Alta California, they noticed that they were all buck naked, the men. They were relieved as soon as they saw one of their women to realize that the women actually dressed somewhat modestly. But the men were all walking around in their Adam suits. So they said, well, we have to civilize them. So in order to do that, well, you have to teach them how to make clothing, right? I mean, and they also wanted to show them better farming technologies. You know, how do you grow crops? How do you not just, you know, wandering around here to there eating what is growing on the ground?
The missions actually provide a great deal of stability and protection for the Indians because they were not, well, the Indians along the coast of Alta California were not warlike. They weren't at all like the Iroquois. They were more like the Huron, and but lazier.